Okay, we're doing our second Wednesday meeting. We started last week, and it's great to see everybody. The first part, I did this handout that I put together when I gave, I had to tell my story, and it's not that interesting, so I did this handout as well with it, and it's on, really, it's kind of a collection of different things that are on the site, big book goals, disease concept of alcoholism, road chart to decision, Oxford group steps. It's a potpourri of stuff, but I thought it would be a good way to start back. And on Saturday, we did the Arch to Freedom, and we looked at the how we go from the world of self-centered to God-centered, and I wrote four thoughts on recovery from alcoholism, and we're going to cover those. It's good, and that's handouts here. So I think you'll get a lot out of it. During the COVID in the last 14 months, I recycled old podcasts, so on Saturdays, if you go back, the whole big book's in order. It took 110 meetings to cover the first 164 pages, so somebody was talking a lot, a lot of rambling, I guess. There's a telemarketer on Grady's phone, so we're going to decline that. For those listening to the podcast, we're on Zoom and we're at the meeting. And then on Sundays, I've started on this site to put out from the beginning again. And then on Saturdays, I'm going to put out the talks that we do at these meetings live. And I'm going to be covering some new material on the Wednesdays and Saturdays, but it's all related to the big book. This sheet here, big book goals, it's just the goal one is to tell us what's wrong with us. And that's in Doctor's Opinion and Bill's story, and we're powerless, right? And there's some of that, the problem, and there is a solution, and more about alcoholism. And the solution is power, our relationship with God. Grady thought it was pretty good when I said on the meeting I did at home that we start talking about God on page 45, and there are people who don't like it. I said, well, get over it. You know, and have a party if it works out, but you know, let's face it, there is one who has all power, that one is God, and we read it at every meeting, and it's true for me. And Lyle, it's true for you. Look, Lyle had a birthday tonight, for those who are listening. And so more about alcoholism is the queer mental twist that precedes the first drink. And Jim, you listen to it, it's helpful.
Yeah.
It's your life. Yeah, and then we have we agnostics, which is our relationship with God and how we have to open our mind to that and what we need to believe. And step two is that there is a power that I can change my life, can change me and restore me to sanity. And then the goal three is how do we get from powerless to power? And we talked about some of that on Saturday. And how we go from a self-centered world where we have no power to a world where we're living in reality with God and not in our own minds. Anybody still do that at all during the day? Anybody have a few minutes where they get self-centered? Am I the only one? I'm the only one, I guess. Very healthy group we got here tonight. And so how do we do that? And then that's the in how it works and into action and working with others. And it's how we find the power to live. And I titled the one, I did the talk at home, it's on the Building the Arch to Freedom, and I titled AA's 12 Steps, A Design for Living a Spiritual Life. And how do we build an arch to which we walk a free man? And that's and then how do we live with God, in harmony with God in the world? Anybody think that's a good idea?
Yeah,
because we were in conflict with everybody and everything, remember? Then the second page was a road chart to decision. And that's on the site, but basically, You have to take step one before you take step two, right? Does that make sense? Some people in AA don't realize that. They want to go like to step 10 or something. Step one has to be done, and it has to be done well, or nothing's going to change. And we have two things wrong with us that make us powerless over alcohol. We can't put alcohol in our bodies without wanting a second drink. Anybody have that problem?
Yes.
Anybody have a lot of that problem?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if I was to go back and drink, I was telling Tim before the meeting, I'd buy two bottles because I know I want to drink the next day. And then I'd be off and I would be drinking every day and it would be so horrible. So the alcohol has no attraction to me. It can't make my life any better than it is right now. And then I have this obsession to drink, even though I know I can't control what I drink. And that's bad, because if you have an obsession to do something that you don't want to do, and you can't keep from doing it, you're screwed. And so alcoholics are in big trouble, because we can't control how much we drink, and we can't keep from taking the first drink sober. Our problems are not all the chaos after we drink. It's pretty bad, right? But our problems are we can't live in the world sober without taking the first drink. Why? Because our mind seeks the effect of alcohol. Now, why do we need that? My wife doesn't need that. Well, we need that because we're living separated from God. We have a spiritual illness and a spiritual dis-ease, and we're at dis-ease with the spirit. And when we are, we get irritable, restless, and discontent. And then alcohol did something special to me that it didn't do for my wife. She just had one glass of wine tonight, and it was a big glass. And she says, well, I'm going to drink a big glass tonight. And I never usually pay attention. We were in a restaurant, and actually the power went out. So we got our appetizer, then the power went out. And then, of course, I didn't have the URL for the podcast, so it was a bad day. And then Jim was giving me a hard time about something before at the noon meeting. And anyway, I'm rambling. But she may have a spiritual illness, but her mind can just be spiritually disturbed and doesn't have to drink. Because there are a lot of spiritually ill people in the world. In fact, Romans says all of us, right, Russ? But we have a problem because alcohol changes that and fixes it. So our mind knows there's something that can take care of that. And so our mind will say, I got a plan for my disease. I'm going to get a drink. Now, we know it's bad because we just got our fourth DUI. And we're chained to the house, but we're going to figure out a way to get that drink because we're alcoholics. Nothing will stop us. Our mind says, I need that ease and comfort of alcohol. And once my mind focuses on that, I can't say no to it. Why? Because I can't see what it's going to do to me, only for me. I heard that the first time, Joe and Charlie, I heard that, and it just was so powerful. So willpower won't work. There are a lot of smart alcoholics. Willpower won't work because you don't have any power of the will if you can't see anything wrong with it right before you do it. Now, you know, I didn't drive through the red light and hit the car that was driving through. I knew that was a bad idea, right? And my mind could say, no, Michael, you stay at the red light. But when we want that ease and comfort of alcohol, nothing can stop us. Now, that's called powerlessness. And that's the truth of the alcoholic. Now, whether he knows that or not is two different things. See, there are people who cannot or will not do this program. They're constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves. They can't see the truth, that there's no hope for them on their own. There's no plan that's going to fix this. That's my plan. Fortunately, we have this book that we've been studying for now. We're in our 13th year, and this book is the plan of recovery that the first 100 did. They relieved them of a hopeless condition of mind and body. And it gave them a relationship with God. So the lack of power is the problem. Power, God, a relationship with God is the key. And We like to talk about the fellowship, and you know, meetings are great. And I heard today that the only three words you need to know in AA is meetings, meetings, meetings. And I said the only three words you need to know in AA is God, God, God. Because that's the reality of it. Meetings are good, but meetings is just the support to get you to the spiritual experience that changes you. Does this make sense? And that's power. And then, so then, if you truly are surrendered in your first step, the second step is not hard. To believe that there's a power that can help you. You don't really need to work on the second step, either you believe it or not. There's a whole chapter on changing your mind about God and your relationship with God, because alcoholics fight that. But if you're really defeated and surrendered, you're willing to go to any length, right, to get your problem solved, right? And you're willing to talk to a power greater than you. And if you're not, then you're not defeated. Now, I talked about the first surrender the other day. There are three surrenders in AA. The first surrender is not voluntary. I thought it was voluntary. But if I think I have the choice to surrender or not, then I can make the choice not to. Does this make sense? I was surrendered. I quicksand surrounded me. Alcohol was my master. There was no way out. I was full of fear. My life was completely unmanageable. And I don't know why, but at 8 in the morning, I had no clue I was going to be surrendered. But at 2:30, I was on my knees, and I asked God to help me. I was done. And I felt so good when I got up. I went and saw a sister and cried. She ran the hospital, and she gave me a hug, and things have worked out since then. But it was the disease surrendered me. And if I thought, well, I have a choice, I'm going to surrender today, well, then the next day I could decide I'm not going to surrender. And that's what hitting bottom is, when you can't see any way out. There's no way out. And I don't know, am I making sense? And a lot of people know, because this famous, it's not circumstances that make you surrendered, it's inside. If you depend on circumstances, the circumstances just keep getting worse. And what my sponsor used to say, buy them more booze. And when people weren't defeated. And that's, alcohol will bring us to our knees. Doesn't it say that in the book? It says we're brought to our knees. It says the desperation of a drowning man. Our demoralization is beyond description. We're in complete despair. We're without hope. And so that's the surrender. That's the first surrender. And the first step has to be done, or you're not going to make it. And so it's a gift. I don't think you can make yourself do the first step. Either you can see your powerless over alcohol, that your life is unmanageable, or you can't. There are people who work on it. They write out descriptions of their first step. The first step is in here. It's complete defeat. Admit complete defeat. And he says in 12:12, why do we talk about alcoholics hitting bottom? Because he says only then will we be able to really go into this 100%. And so, the decision in step three is a different decision. You know you're powerless over alcohol, right? And you believe that there's a power that can help you. And in third step, you're deciding that you're going to turn your life over to this power and let him run your life. So the first surrender, I think, is involuntary, or it's the grace or whatever. And you're brought to your knees, and then you decide that I'm not going to play God anymore. Why? It doesn't work. And my problems were of my own making. They arose out of me, and I was self-will run riot. I made decisions based on self that harmed me and others, and my troubles were my own making. So I don't want to live that way anymore. And so the third step falls naturally out of the first two. because my life was unmanageable, because now I understood I was the one running it. So everybody should have to sign a card that says, I fire myself. And we should make them carry it around for like 30 or 60 or 90 days and read it. I'm Michael, I'm an alcoholic, I'm going to fire myself today. And you know, it sounds silly, but that's the deal, right? We got to fire it. So the third step is a turning point to where you're either going to go on drinking and die, or you're going to choose sanity and sobriety. And you're going to choose to seek God. God can and what he's foresought. And that's the road chart, the decision. And because it says a life run on self-will will never be successful. Anybody agree with that? Now, did anybody have a disturbing moment today at all? I was the only one. It wasn't long, but when I do, it's because I'm back in self. The power went out in the restaurant. The URL wasn't on the site. You know, she's on my case about something, and you know, and that doesn't have to last very long. But you're back in self, and so I have tools now. I say, well, we'll go to the restaurant. I'll talk to Lal. He'll fix the thing. I said the prayers. She'll stop. She'll stop eventually, and. It's true. She never listens to these, so I can really say anything I want. My wife's great, but nobody's going to come back. But you see, I know when I'm playing God. I don't like the way things look. I have fear. I'm angry. I'm upset. I'm irritable. I don't want to be that way. And so, the decision in step three is that I don't want to live that way anymore. I don't want to be conflict with everybody and everything. I want peace and serenity. Anybody think that's a good idea? All right. So the next handout's the disease concept of alcoholism. And this is a great chart. It's from Joe and Charlie handout. And it shows here is the mental, this is the physical. And then this is how normal people feel when they drink. This is what happens to us. And then this is what happens to us sober that leads to the first drink. It's a very clever, and it's on the handout, and it says disease, it's on the site, disease concept of alcoholism. I think it's worth going over this again. If I take a drink of alcohol, I react differently than my wife. My wife, you know, I don't know that she finished a whole wine, I didn't pay attention, but she didn't ask for a second drink, right? We would order two, right? And so if I put alcohol in my body, I have an allergy, a reaction that sets off, and nobody really knows why. They talk about acetone here and acetone craving, I don't know. But we're different. Everybody in this room has the same thing, and we want a second drink. It's called the phenomenon of craving. And then it says we have a well-known spree, and then we emerge, and we feel terrible, don't we? We feel bad, and then we have guilt and remorse, but then we're sober. And then guess what happens? We're living separated from God. And we get restless, and we get irritable. Irritable, you know what that means? You just get, things bother you. You get discontented. You're not content with the way your life is. You're diseased with it. And then you get angry. Anybody get angry at all ever before you came in here? And people still get angry now, but we have steps to deal with it. Fear. Anybody get fear? Relying on self produces fear. Well, they have this thing. It's really clever here. They have this thermometer. And I don't know how Joe and Charlie did this, but this is true of all alcoholics who come to AA. You're sober. You're sober, and you haven't worked the steps. You're coming to meetings, and you're at step zero. That means you're powerless over alcohol, but you don't have any power in your life, and you haven't taken any action yet. So your emotions build up. Now, some people can go higher on the emotional thermometer before they drink. But eventually, the alcoholic, the emotions will build up, and they'll they'll seek the ease of comfort of alcohol. The mental obsession kicks in. They drink. This is why alcoholics drink. Sober is when we're at risk of the first drink. That's when the disease is, we're separated from God. And so your emotions build up, and how much can you take living sober without God before you drink? Well, think how few people make it. We got all these coins in here, 5, 10, 15, a whole box full of them. We have to keep rebuying the 1 month. We don't have to rebuy the 3 year coins. And it's because we have a disease that we, our emotions build up and we can't say no to it. So I think this is the disease concept of alcoholism. And I think it's really helpful. So if you're new, how long can you go? That's why when people used to say, well, I don't want to rush the new guy. Hello, they're living at step zero. How long can they go without God? I don't want to rush them. I used to hear that a lot years ago. Oh, they need time. They need time. They need to work on their first step. How can you work on being powerless? You're either powerless or not. Yeah. And so I'm not being silly, but I mean, we need to get right into the deal. But it really depends on the person and whether they're defeated or not. Does this make sense? That's why I talk so much about being surrendered. Because I could see when Lal came back after that last relapse, he was ready. And he was ready, he was done. And now you want to stay done. So how do you stay done? Well, that's where meetings come in and being connected and continuing to study the book and work the steps and pray and inventory. This is a great chart. This is what happens, how Joe and Charlie describe the new members at the center of this circle. It's surrounded by old members. So the new guy would come in, and this is the old days, and there'd be a lot of people who had worked the steps. That's what an old member was, somebody who had worked the steps, not that they had 40 years. Now, people like to choose sponsors now on how long they've been sober, which may be a good, I don't know if it's a good or bad idea, but find somebody who's worked the steps, in particular out of the big book. That, and they could be sober 60 days, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how long they're sober, if they've had the spiritual awakening, they work the steps and they can take you through the book. And so the new member gets support, strength, hope from the old members. And this is the fellowship of people who suffer the same problem. We covered that Sunday night, page 17, the common peril, remember? And then so the new person becomes willing to believe that there is hope, that there's a power that can help him. He becomes willing because he sees how it's worked in the other members. And then he wants to investigate what they did. So on page 20 it says, you wonder how we overcame this condition. You might be asking us, what do I have to do? And Sandy Beach says, there's only one question you're supposed to ask when you come to AA. What do I do next? It's a series, that's what the big book is. It's a series of directions. And then they want to pick up the kit of spiritual tools, and they do the steps, and then they get a change in their whole attitude towards life and God, and they have a relationship with their Creator that gives them a power, and then they become an old member, you see? And then when I started this meeting, well, the idea was that I believe that if people would do what was in the big book, they would have a power in their lives that would keep them from drinking, and they wouldn't have to die like my son did. And it worked for me. I knew it could work for them, so I decided to teach the book. God told me to do it. And I had a vision of people coming here doing this, and then they would help someone else. And I know Stu's here, and I helped him, and he's helping people, and I know Lal's helping people and other people I've worked with. And there are people who've come here and they've found sponsors and they're working with people. So it works. So, and now we're getting to this thing which is the Oxford Group Steps. And it's great because a lot of people don't want to talk about God or Christianity or Jesus, and we're not supposed to mention anything like that at the meetings, and that may be true. and I'm not saying what people should believe or not believe, but the Oxford Group was a Christian organization, and they were Christians who were trying to lead an obedient life to the Holy Spirit. They were justified, they believed, but they didn't have the fruits in their life, and they wanted to become more obedient and change the way they lived. So they had four absolutes: honesty, purity, unselfishness, and love. And they wanted to practice these. And they had six steps to help them do that. And that's where we got our steps from. I'm not saying that you have to be Christian to be in AA, and don't send me comments. But I'm telling you where it came from, these spiritual principles in this group. And in fact, the two people that were most influential were ministers to Bill W. and Dr. Bob. And the Oxford Group was started by Frank Buckman in 1908. And then the Calvary Church, where Ebby went when they rescued him and Roland Hazard went, was the Reverend Shoemaker, who helped write a lot of the book. And the Oxford Group tenets, there were six. The first was surrendering. And we made that into a conscious decision to turn our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And then the second step they had was examining your sins, which we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And they had sharing and confessing. And they admitted, and you can see how Bill took these steps in the Towns Hospital on page 14 of the big book, 13 and 14. Sharing and confessing, admitting to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And then making restitution. And we took that into step 8 and 9, made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. And then the fifth step of the Oxford Group was asking for guidance. Now we added step 1, which we talked about why tonight. They started with step 3, but we started with step 1 and 2. And then we added willingness in step 6 and willingness in step 8. And then they're asking for, and we added step 10 was how we live this each day, continue to do it. And then asking for guidance was their fifth step, sought through prayer and meditation, prove our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. And that's what we're going from, conscious separation to conscious contact, right? And then witnessing. They told Ebby he had to witness, and he didn't want to go to Bill, right, Stu? He didn't want to do it. But they said, Ebby, you got to do it, or we're going to do, or they're going to throw him, and they were going to throw him out. So he was 60 days sober, and he went to Bill, and we're here today. And witnessing. And we have, that's having had our spiritual awakenings the result of these steps. Sponsor we also got from the Oxford Group. The sponsor in the Oxford Group was the one who brought you to the group and sponsored that this is something that this person wanted or needed. And then we took that as to the sponsor in AA before the big book often had to pay for the hospitalization. And it was like $25 or $50 for 5 days then, which was a lot of money. But the sponsor would actually help them, and then they would do quiet time together every day, and they would go through the steps. And Dr. Bob worked the steps in 2 days. He had a 2-day program. He let them sober up for 1 day. Then he would go in the room and he'd ask them if they were going to give themselves to the Lord. And if they weren't willing, then he left the room. He went to the next guy. And so that's, I don't know why I put this, but was this helpful, Carrie and Ann? Yeah, it's good stuff. This is where we came from. And so the spiritual principles that we have could be used by everyone. They're not just for alcoholics. And when people would come to the meeting, they would say, can I come? Is it open or closed? I'd say, are you a spiritual seeker? Are you seeking God? Have a seat. Join us. This next is really important. This is the five dominoes in the process of recovery. You didn't know that. And I'm going to read, this is from the steps we took. And the dominoes are willingness, belief, decision, action, and then faith. And he says, I think from the very first step, surrender, we start to get it. Because surrender produces the power of believing. I like that. It does. When you surrender, you believe that there's a way out when you completely give up. And he says, there's no way you can see or believe the truth until you have surrendered your old perception of the truth. I really like that. You have to surrender that the way you were seeing things was wrong and be open to a new truth. And then the truth is God's truth instead of my truth. See, I could see that my truth didn't work. And then it says, change actually begins with surrender because you can't see another alternative until you surrender your way of doing things, your plan. When you realize you have no way out, you're willing to try anything else, right? And it says, then the dominoes start to fall. And so you have these dominoes. If you're very willing, it's going to push belief. And belief pushes the decision. And then if you've really been willing, the decision's going to push you right into action. Remember it says after you say the prayer in step three prayer, it says, remember, you must completely abandon yourself completely to God. And then it says, this is crucial and vital, this decision, but it's not going to do you any good unless next and at once you begin the process of facing and be rid of the things that are blocking you. And then the actions drive the results and lead to faith. Faith in AA is true trust in God. It's a knowledge of God that God can do it. God can and will if you seek Him. God has done for me what I could not do for myself. Remember, the central fact of their life was that they had a relationship with their Creator. It was the central fact of their relationship. So it says really the energy of the first domino is what sets the whole thing. And you can see people come in and they're willing, very willing, and then they start to lose it very quickly. Has anybody else seen that when they've worked with people? And so that's why the first step in being completely defeated is so important. And then I have to remember that for me today, I have to stay completely defeated. And you know how I know I was? Because when I woke up, I prayed to God. I said, God, direct my thinking today. Divorce it from selfish to self-seeking motives. I went to a meeting today. I worked with the sponsee today. I'm here tonight. I looked at the handout today to see what I was going to talk about, and I've completely abandoned all that. And I hope it was good. I'm going to end here, and I'm not going to review next week. So you guys, yeah, all right, but I'm not going to review. I promise I won't. And next week we're going to finish this, and then Saturday, please come. You can take a handout today if you want. It's going to be very good. And I did it at home for the people listening, The Arch to Freedom, and how the book talks about that. And then I'm going to do one at home on going from the my world to God's world, and that's under on the site under recovery from alcoholism. It's the last resource on the handout there. So I'm going to stop there, and I hope this was helpful. And we'll open it up some. I talk too long, but I hope you'll forgive me. Thank you for those out there listening on the podcast. I hope it was helpful to you as well.